Now, in the case of United States against Diamond.
May it please the court, my name is Alexis Pfeiffer and I am appearing today on behalf of the defendant appellant Arlene Diamond in this case. We are here today because of two distinct errors committed by the district court. First, the court committed clear error when it sentenced Ms. Diamond for the entire amount of funds funneled through the Omega conspiracy. And second, the government presented insufficient evidence to convict Ms. Diamond of either money laundering itself or a conspiracy to commit money laundering. Because of these errors, we request that this court vacate Ms. Diamond's convictions under 18 U.S.C. sections 1956 and 1957 and remand this case to the Central District of Illinois for sentencing that comports with the federal guidelines. And I will turn first to our sentencing argument. The court found at sentencing, which is appended to our brief, I believe at page 4 and also later in the sentencing transcript, that Ms. Diamond
joined No doubt that you did, in fact, comply with Circuit Rule 30.
Yes, Your Honor. And I checked before I came up here.
You bet.
The court did find
that Lanto's sins are not on your shoulders.
The court said that it did find Ms. Diamond responsible for the entire scope of the conspiracy, which it stated was an amount of $12.6 million. Now, it is the commentary to Section 1B1.3 of the relevant conduct section of the sentencing guidelines that points out the court's clear error in this case. That section provides that a defendant's relevant conduct does not include the conduct of members of a conspiracy before the defendant joined the conspiracy, and that is true even if the defendant knew of the conduct. Now, as you have heard both Mr. Sanchez and Mr. Lancho speak of earlier, it was Clyde Hood who came up with the idea for the Omega investment program in 1994. It was Clyde Hood who recruited network marketers, and it was Clyde Hood who developed the various documents that accompanied his conspiracy. Ms. Diamond did not even meet Clyde Hood until mid to late 1998. She became involved in Omega as an investor first in 1997, working through another network marketer, Mike Kadosky. And was not
in. Didn't take the fact that she began as an investor as the basis of an insanity defense in this case?
No, Your Honor. She did not. As applied here then, since Ms. Diamond did not become involved as a network marketer until mid to late 1998, she is not responsible for any money funneled through the Omega conspiracy until that date. The government's argument simply ignores the plain language of this commentary. They attempt to argue that her sentence is proper based on what they view as her extensive and longstanding involvement in the conspiracy. And this ignores the fact that Ms. Diamond received a separate enhancement for her extensive involvement under Section 3B1.1 of the sentencing guidelines. There is nothing in the relevant conduct section that allows for a separate enhancement.
We accepted your argument. How would that change your sentence?
I believe she would drop at least 2 to 4 levels, which would reduce her time at best from 17 and a half years to 11 and a quarter. Moreover, the government's cases cited in defense.
How old is she?
She is 67. She'll be 68 in September. And I believe, Your Honor, it is worth pointing out that she had a clean record for the first 65 years of her life, which the court did
take
into account.
She wasn't too clean here, though.
No, she was not. In light of the facts that we have discussed, we would request remand for sentencing that comports with the federal guidelines. It is difficult to tell at this point because of errors that have been committed what monies should be counted towards Ms. Diamond's sentence, but it is clear that any money that was lost before Ms. Diamond actually joined Omega as a network marketer in mid to late 1998 should not be included, and that any money she lost personally as an investor, which was approximately $5,000 between 1997 and 2000, should not be included.
Deducting the $5,000 would not affect her guideline range.
No, it would not. It makes up for the fact that she missed her insanity plea. Second, we submit that the government submitted insufficient evidence to convict Ms. Diamond of either money laundering or a money laundering conspiracy. The government was required to prove that Ms. Diamond conducted a financial transaction knowing that the property involved is illegally derived and knowing that the transaction was designed to conceal or disguise the nature or the location or the source of the funds.
Did she forward all the money to Hood or did she keep it some herself?
I believe the testimony states that she forwarded all the money she received to Mr. Hood.
What about the money that went to her foundation?
I'm sorry.
Account,
Which foundation, Your Honor?
Foundation account or something.
Is that the Cayman International Trust account, Your Honor?
No, I think the Hope.
The New Hope Trust account was purely Omega money, and approximately $1.8 million went through that account beginning in mid to late 1998.
But she didn't retain any of it or spend any of it herself?
I believe the only personal spending that Ms. Diamond engaged in was for any Federal Express shipping costs for sending cashier's checks and money orders on to Mr. Hood.
Did she take a trip to Dubai and Belize?
She did take a trip to Dubai. Those trips were paid for by Mr. Hood, so presumably with Omega funds, but not by Ms. Diamond herself. This court requires a showing of both distinct transactions and deliberate concealment to support a money laundering conviction.
But by the way, does the record in this case reveal who were the other seven people capable of engaging in
No, Your Honor, it does not.
Transactions?
I believe Mr. Hood is the only one of the seven identified in the record.
Several of them are identified in the records of other prime banknote cases and are currently guests of the federal government.
Thank you, Your Honor. The government did not need its showing here. What it did was give the jury a pile of evidence of arguably suspicious but albeit legal incidents, hoping to provide the taint of illegality based on the large amount of evidence it had against Mr. Hood. Throughout the trial and throughout Mr. Sanchez's first argument before the court this morning, he has continually referred to Mr. Hood's conduct. Mr. Hood took a plea agreement, and the government was not able to use that evidence to convict Mr. Hood, and it is insufficient to convict Ms. Diamond. There is no evidence that Ms. Diamond did anything to clean up funds, that she did anything to make the money look like it originated from a legitimate source. And that is the essence of money laundering. I would compare what Ms. Diamond did to what a bank robber does when he steals $100,000 and divides up the proceeds between his helpers, or when a bank robber steals $50,000 and then uses that money to buy a car. Merely transferring funds or spending funds is not criminalized under the money laundering statute. It's a money laundering statute, not a money spending statute. And Ms. Diamond did nothing to conceal the nature of the funds or to attempt to make them look legitimate. Moreover, the government has not shown the distinct transactions required to maintain a money laundering conviction. There are no proceeds discrete from the mail fraud. The government used the same evidence to convict Ms. Diamond of both mail fraud and money laundering. Ms. Diamond was convicted of her fraud offenses because she collected money from Omega lenders, the victims of the Omega scheme, and then forwarded the money wherever Mr. Hood told her to send it, which was usually to him. Ms. Diamond was convicted of money laundering because she collected money from Omega investors and forwarded on to where Mr. Hood told her to send it, which was, again, usually to him. These offenses are indistinguishable, and the government has failed to meet its burden here. As I stated before, Mr. Hood clearly knew his plan was a scam. He clearly wanted to hide his money. But the fact that Ms. Diamond has been held responsible for what Mr. Hood decided to do with the money once he received it from her is patently unfair and does not justify her sentence in this case. The government must be required to show something more than separately legal incidents, and it must be required to do something more than load the jury up with evidence and require the jury to sift through that evidence to find the taint of illegality. In light of the foregoing, we do request that the court vacate Ms. Diamond's convictions under 1957 and 1956 of Title 18 of the U.S. Code, and that this case be remanded for sentencing that comports with the guidelines. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Sanchez.
For the record, my name, may it please the court, my name is Esteban Sanchez, and I represent the United States in this case.
Okay, this time there's no factual finding that enables us to avoid the legal issue. So my main question to you is how, given application note 2 to section 1B1.3, how is it possible to hold as relevant conduct proceeds that predated Diamond's joining the conspiracy?
Your Honor, the answer to that question is not so much centered on the date that she joined, but when she joined, what did she do? What was her agreement?
I don't understand that. Application Note 2, Paragraph 8, says explicitly that it does depend on the date on which a person joins a conspiracy, and that it is never relevant conduct that thing, the crimes that occurred before a person joined are just not relevant conduct, and that's all there is to it.
Unless,
and that's what the application note says.
That's correct. Unless, and I would suggest this is...
There's no unless clause in that note.
I understand that. But there are circumstances by which a person who joined in the middle of the conspiracy could be held accountable for the entire conduct of the conspiracy.
That just contradicts the note.
Well, what?
Right? If you have a conspiracy that imports 100 kilograms of cocaine from Colombia,
yes,
and you join after it's imported 50,
yes,
right, and you participate in the other 50, then your relevant conduct is 50 kilograms, even if, under this note, even if the principal manager of the conspiracy tells you when you join, we've already imported 50, we're going to import another 50.
Yes, but...
So knowledge,
but that, is the,
knowledge that they had already knocked off two banks when you joined the conspiracy doesn't make you liable for...
I do not dispute that, Your Honor, but this is my point. Imagine that in your scenario, which is the scenario or the illustration that the Sentencing Commission uses...
It would have been good, by the way, for your brief to discuss this. Your brief in neither case even mentions this note. And it's awfully hard for you to persuade us of a particular view about its meaning if you pretend it doesn't exist.
I understand, Your Honor. But in the scenario that you use and the scenario that a commission used, imagine that that was an agreement to distribute. But imagine that the person that comes in after 50 kilograms is a lawyer or an accountant, and the accountant finds out that there's been these transactions and that there are some investigation, and he goes back to what has happened. Let's assume that it's money as opposed to drugs. And he goes back and falsifies records, or he goes back about those transactions, and he goes back and tries to hide and conceal these transactions that had occurred before. In that instance, I would
say... No, that's a separate crime. He's now conceding the existence of a crime. He doesn't get nailed for the crime. He gets nailed for what he's just doing now, concealing evidence of a crime.
But he called misprision of felony.
Yeah.
But wouldn't he also be also part... that would be also part of his agreement as part of the conspiracy, that he would go back...
That's his new crime. It's a brand new crime he commits.
But he would also be... It would also be part of the agreement that he made when he entered the conspiracy.
He entered the room, he says, not only am I going to get stabbed for what I'm about to do, but I'm willing to accept the responsibility of what you've already done. As a matter of criminal law, well, you know, criminal law is not a matter of guess and speculation. I mean, if he covers up a crime that is already committed, that's a crime, but he doesn't get nailed for the crime itself.
Well, I agree with that, except that in this instance, that crime was the course of conduct done by other people as part of a conspiracy.
Right.
And that's what the relevant conduct section. And Judge Markowski found that when Ms.
Furthered the conspiracy by concealing the evidence of the existence of the conspiracy.
No, what the basis is that when she joined the conspiracy,
uh-huh,
and found out that she... that there was an investigation. In fact, she knew about the investigation even before she met Clyde Hood, and told Clyde Hood, I know I have a way to fix this. She comes back and asks those people who laundered proceeds before her to provide her with the information so that she can then act as part of her role in the conspiracy to protect the conspiracy, to maintain the concealment. And that is the basis.
I don't understand how your argument is compatible with the actual language of the application note. I mean, take the drug case, for example.
Yes, sir.
Let's suppose you join the conspiracy after 50 kilos have been imported and before another 50.
Yes, sir.
And one of your tasks in the conspiracy is to bribe the local police so they won't shut down the importation ring. And you do that. You try to protect the conspiracy. In your view, does that make this bribe-paying person liable for all 100 kilograms?
No, because in that case, the bribe is to protect future action.
It's to protect people from arrest.
I'm sorry?
It's to protect people from arrest. It's not to protect
But the pain of the bribe.
Conspirators.
But the pain of the bribe is the future action. In this instance, she injected herself into what happened in the past to try to protect it.
Trying to protect people from arrest in the future always bears on what happens in the past, because one of the things you can get arrested for is what happens in the past.
Exactly.
If you answer my question no, then I don't see how this case is any different.
Well,
if you answer my question yes, I don't see how your position is compatible with the guidelines.
The issue is, in my opinion, what was her agreement when she came into the conspiracy? Part of that agreement was to protect the conspiracy from past conduct and from future conduct. And consequently, it is our position that she, having taken the step to protect and familiarize herself with those things to actively protect those people and the conspiracy itself, not only the money laundering conspiracy, but the fraud conspiracy, she is reasonably, those conducts are reasonably foreseeable to her. It's not just that she knew and ignored it, it's that she knew and she went and tried to do something about it.
The problem is that perhaps that applies in conspiracy, the count of conspiracy, but the sentencing is changes it. I don't know if you see what I mean, but it, prior to the sentencing guidelines, that theory had some application about protecting. It didn't make any difference, because, but now we have the sentencing guidelines, and they're taking a different view of conspiracy, perhaps. But let me ask you this.
Yes,
what about the sufficiency of the evidence with the other counts? That
The evidence against Ms. Diamond was overwhelming. There's this argument that the fraud stopped, or that the fraud, that this was, this conduct was part of the fraud, is not, is without merit. And I cite to the court the case that he cited in counsel's reply brief, United States versus Seward, in which this court noted that the fraud is completed once a person, the person who is committing the fraud, accepts the check or the cash, and in the case of a check, when it's deposited. In that case, a decision in which Judge Easterbrook participated states, and I'll quote, "In fact, this court has noted that money laundering can be a critical element in a complex fraud scheme because it helps keep the scheme afloat and helps disguise the source of the fraud." Thus, there's no reason that the government could not have used the checks, and says that consistent with the law that a money laundering offense can occur while the fraud is still ongoing. And this is what happened here. When Ms. Diamond received the funds from her investors, she deposited it into a trust account in somebody else's name, a fictitious name, and then parked them there. New Hope Trust account. And then parked them there, waiting for directions from Clyde Hood as to what to do with the money. And therefore, the evidence in that alone, those subsequent transactions clearly are financial transactions within the meaning of the money laundering statute. The same thing with structuring the deposit. She withdrew the funds, either in cash so that she could buy a Sears check. In response to one of Your Honor's questions to opposing counsel, she deposited $1.8 million into that account. She withdrew $1.5 million from that account. Of that, the government traced $240,000 directly to Mr. Hood. She deposited I believe, over $100,000, or my memory is not right now, but a large sum of money to an account that she had opened in Dubai.
And you weren't able to discover that account?
We were not able to get that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Ms. Pfeiffer?
The government has again failed to point out what Ms. Diamond has done to conceal funds. She has done nothing deliberate to conceal.
What was the deposit in the New Hope Trust account? What's that got?
The deposit in the New Hope Trust account was actually an account that she did hold openly in her name. She was listed as the general manager of that account. and that was where the Omega money went first before it went to Mr. Hood.
Did money go to Dubai?
She did have an account in Dubai, and there was some money transferred to Dubai, but there's nothing illegal about sending money to another country via wire transfer, even when that country has bank secrecy laws. And I would refer the court to the Esterman case, cited extensively by both parties in its briefs. Ms. Diamond's conduct is analogous to the conduct of the defendant there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Pfeiffer. And we appreciate your willingness and that of your firm to accept the appointment in this case, and we thank you for the assistance you've been not only to your client but to us. Thanks very much. The case is taken under advisement.